Hey, everybody. We are back with another commission podcast. Today's commission is the 1992 courtroom classic, A Few Good Men, starring Demi Moore and Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson.
Don't list them all. We'll be here all day.
Just a bunch of people that you've heard of and seen on the large and small screen. Directed by Rob Reiner, written by Aaron Sorkin, and frequent Reiner collaborator William Goldman. This is commissioned by our old friend Sean Ray, who has got a checkered commission history. He has done various things like the fantastic sci-fi horror It Follows, the solid horror James Wan series Insidious, Blood Simple, the first Coen Brothers film. Interesting in if nothing else for anthropology, archaeology type of reasons, and then Black Rain. Which is Michael Douglas as a motorcycle welding cop out of water in Japan, taken down. I don't know. I think I blacked out in the last act of that movie. This is an easy watch. This is a great movie.
It's a little over 2 hours and 10 minutes, and it feels like about 8 minutes worth of film because I enjoy it.
I was shocked that this is like the movie is fully half the courtroom scenes or the courtroom battle.
Yeah.
In my memories of this film, and it's been a decade plus since I've seen this last, that, you know, it's like essentially the last act. The first 2/3 are the investigation, but there's not much to investigate. We know the facts of the case. Like within 10 minutes of the movie, it's just getting the people to admit them or you know, getting the smoking gun.
Yeah, it's different in that it's not so much a mystery. I viewed this more as a character drama. It's weird. This is kind of a tale of two movies here because on one hand, it's very much about the personal development of Kathy, right? Tom Cruise's character.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's questioning, like, what does it mean to be a patriot? What is security and truth worth? What are you willing to give up for it? Those kinds of things. And I feel like Aaron Sorkin is pretty good at that stuff usually, mixing, like, pretty good character development with these other themes, even if it remains a little bit surface level. I've seen criticism leveled against this movie saying, oh, well, it doesn't go deep enough into these topics. It doesn't really give you a clear answer. I'm like, well, yeah, but this is a movie that was designed to gross $240 million in the box office, like it did. So what do you want?
And it's of an era. It's of a time and era.
More innocent time, some might say.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kept, like, I still think this is a fantastic movie, and it's very watchable, but, and when I was a younger man, it, like, really got the heart pumping, right? But as an older man who's seen, first of all, just a shit ton of Aaron Sorkin at this point, like, you really see his bag of tricks on display.
Sure.
And also, as a more cynical, almost 42-year-old, some of this stuff, like, I question how, like, black and white and how, you know, it's very good moral melodrama, but it doesn't feel very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as great as that final scene is and as great as the acting job is and it really sucks you in, it's like it's still Tom Cruise screaming in court at the superior officer with the judge saying, you're out of order, you're out of order, gavel, gavel, all these armed Marines just standing there. You know, like,
it's over the top.
Yeah, and like, it's also like that, you know, it's parodied in The Simpsons where, like, Slideshow Bob was getting, you know, he was on trial for, like, election fraud. Mm-hmm. And he does this Colonel Jessup thing where he essentially confesses to the whole thing, but it's like, well, what are you going to do because you need me?
Right.
And a judge has him arrested. He goes, what for? He goes, oh, yes, the various crimes I committed. Like,
right.
I guess I want to talk about this much later because Sean wants us to get into that scene, and it's the fucking spotlight of the movie, so
absolutely.
Of course it will. But, like, I do want to ask the question: is Colonel Jessup believably that, like, stupid or like berserker? Because I don't think he's unintelligent.
That's a fair question. I think we should leave that for the final scene discussion.
I want to, before we get too much further into this movie review, I want to let Sean Ray have the floor here.
Okay.
Hey guys, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the 1992 classic A Few Good Men. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, and Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, and Jack Nicholson are amazing in it.
Mm-hmm.
He is in his full Jack Nicholson-y stage, but he's perfect as Colonel Jessup, in my opinion. This is directed by Rob Reiner, who had an amazing first 7 films to start his career, including This is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, Stand By Me again, apparently. Misery and A Few Good Men. I enjoy watching the three defense lawyers try to solve this mystery as they're being derailed by a powerful man who will do anything to cover up his mistakes. The truth and lies the defense team have to go through to find justice for the clients as well as the victim. The frustration of the defense team because the defendants Dawson and Downey are not fully cooperating them due to their honor code. Mm-hmm. The fears and frustrations of a rookie lawyer trying to get out of the shadow of his father. And, of course, that final scene where Jessup is called to testify. I think Aaron has said on the Godfather podcast he's seen the first Godfather between 20 and 30 times, and this film is my Godfather. I've seen it at least 20 times, and I love it each time. He says that from the moment Caffey introduces the ground crew of O'Malley and Rodriguez, I know every line from every character until the end of the movie.
How many times have you seen this movie?
I think, honestly, it's probably my third time.
Okay. I've seen it on and off, like, parts almost in its entirety, probably right. Like five times.
This is like, so like, if there's a timeline of my personal interest in film, this movie came out at a time where I was old enough. I was like 15 and 16. I was old enough to be intensely interested in adult movies that I was seeing, like the Oscars and stuff and commercials, but like not old enough to like have my fucking mom let me go see a rated R movie. I'd have to move out for that. This is one of the first movies I watched when like, you know, I had a short list of like, I'm going to VCR this shit as soon as I get out of my own home, you know? And I was excited and it like this and like JFK, which is another one, funny enough, that I think Sean, it's an upcoming commission anyway. Uh-huh. Those are on my short list because I tend to really like these political thrillers. I read a lot of Grisham when I, like Grisham and Clancy. Right. That was like, you know, my big adult diet growing up. Uh-huh. What's about you? What's your relationship with the film?
It's one of those things that I had seen kind of in parts on TV on and off when I was growing up. And, you know, like my dad would watch them, right? And I wasn't that interested in them because I wasn't that old. Eventually, like, I had heard a lot of good things about this movie and I knew I had seen pieces of it. And I'm like, fuck it, let's go watch this movie. And so probably when I was like 17 or so, mm-hmm. I watched the movie in its entirety and I loved it. I loved it from the first watch. It's just stellar acting mm-hmm. all around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have some very minor complaints about this movie, but they're just that. They're minor. Mm-hmm. This is overall a really entertaining film.
Yeah, the other thing I hope I don't forget to talk about is like as I was watching this, I'm like, this would be another like decent like remake.
That's what I'm thinking. It's almost like 30 years.
Since refresh it for like a modern, you know, mm-hmm. like what kind of bullshit would a modern
you
general
can still
get
cast
to?
Tom Cruise as Caffey. He could play the same age.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a problem at all.
In fact, and maybe it's a sequel. It's A Few More Good Men.
Right.
And he's just now he's not in the end.
It's 3 years later. Now he's got a reputation.
Yeah. But wouldn't he be like, With it, I wonder what his career arc would get. Would he be like the equivalent of on the Supreme, Marshall Justice Court or whatever?
He would be the judge in the court.
He would be the JAG, Judge Advocate General.
Five-star
Judge Advocate General.
I've just got reams of notes here on Caffey and stuff that I want to talk about his character because it's simultaneously the best character and also the weirdest, but maybe most unbelievable character in the whole movie.
That's
the
Sorkin.
Yeah. So
it's a Sorkin's like a Unami flavor. It goes down so good, but then you like burp. It's like, what is that weird aftertaste? Why is he always swinging a baseball bat? What the fuck? Yeah, it's Sorkin. It's Sorkin-y.
I mean, it's not even just the baseball stuff. I'm thinking, how does a character like Caffey make it to JAG? How does he become a Navy lawyer?
Right.
When every tendency we see from him is to flout authority, to ignore regulation and protocol. Like, in the course of this movie, he is always late. He's chronically late, which is not something you do in the military, in any branch.
Mm-hmm. I've been told, anyway.
In order to get to where he is, he had to go through two levels of schooling. He had to go through ODS, which is Officer Development School. And then he had to go through NJS, which is Navy Justice School.
Mm-hmm.
And ODS is not like you know, boot camp. It's not right. It's not like basic training or anything, but it is rigorous, and then they teach you about the protocols and they enforce those protocols. This is a man who is chronically late. 6 a.m. is apparently super fucking early for him. He's like, oh, yeah. 6 a.m., right? Oh, right, Jesus right. Christ. Dude, if you've been through ODS, you're probably waking up at like 4 a.m. regularly. he forgets that he needs to be dismissed from meetings by a superior officer.
Right.
What? What? Have you gone through the programs?
Also,
he's not crazy about boats, which I thought was hilarious.
He's, for Christ's sakes, you're in the Navy.
He never has a pin on him. He's chronically unprepared.
Right.
Like, these are all things you would get a code red under Jessup for.
However, I will say, this guy reminds me of any of my real life acquaintances. This guy reminds me a lot of our buddy Ian.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
And like, he is ascended to the highest level of like the justice. The, you know, it seems like he's a very well respected judge. So like, I think it can happen. You just have the right combination of intellect, charm.
Right,
and
but he's not in the military. The military demands precision, and it's demonstrated. I think the reason they show that scene early, not even early, just at the very beginning of the movie, of, you know, the line of gunmen juggling their guns. I don't know what the fuck it's called.
Right.
I'm not in JAG.
Drill.
Doing this drill. That is to demonstrate the level of precision that the military demands. And it's to reinforce Jessup's arguments, right?
Like, this is not an organization that makes mistakes or gets things confused or is sloppy.
But that should also be reflected in Tom Cruise's character, Caffey.
Right.
Because he's a part of that.
But he's a Navy boy, not a Marine.
Because the Navy has no standards whatsoever.
As any jarhead would tell, as anyone would tell you, that's no Marine Corps. But no, I take your point. It's like,
but that's all.
But
even...
here's the thing: like, how because I just watched Top Gun. I just watched Top Gun like 4 months ago. Cecily had never seen it, it was like a spring day, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? We're watching it right now.
Great, also great film.
The exact same character beats as Top Gun. It's the brash, almost
lunatic
disregard for orders who's being sent to this like very prestigious this thing, and he's not really qualified. He's got an old man with like a revered yet somehow checkered past. It's always constantly stacking up to him. And
well, that's the thing.
It's like Tom Cruise is the exact same fucking character in both movies. It's just there's less homoerotic volleyball in this one.
Sure.
So people say, well, this is a series. This like, you know, they take the character more seriously, even though.
And I know people are screaming at me like, there's a reason for all this. And yes, I get it. But I don't think it would excuse everything we see, because even having been through NJS, having been through 8 years of law school, most likely, this is a man who doesn't know the procedure for getting his client's new representation.
Right.
What the fuck?
Right.
He has to ask his fellow lawyers about that?
Right.
Ask the judge how to do that? No! No, he should know how to do that.
Yeah. And even if you didn't know, like, that's something you'd easily be able to find out. Like, that would be the easiest thing for a lawyer with a law degree to figure out. Like, I don't remember the exact procedure. You know what will be, where it will be. It'll be in the Uniform Code of Justice,
right?
Or it'll be in,
I know exactly where to look it up. I'll do
Maryland
that
legal status statute. Like, yeah, it's like the it's like a programmer not remembering how to fucking do a quick sort and just being like, well, how do you do a quick sort? Fuck, motherfucker, Google Experts Exchange. How are you asking this in a meeting? Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like that this character is like Sorkin's idea of what he would be like in the military.
Of what Sorkin would be like,
yeah, and if the military wouldn't have a guy like them, they wouldn't have him.
They wouldn't
and,
have
right,
him. He wouldn't
yeah.
be in the JAG.
Yeah,
Corps.
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's ridiculous. Also, Caffey is a train wreck on multiple levels. It's not even just that he's poorly trained and somehow glides through on Daddy's coattails.
Yeah,
his reputation. Caffey also there's a scene where he gets fucking blitzed. And he comes home because Markinson has just killed himself.
Yeah.
He's found out about that. And he pisses off Demi Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes walking in the rain. And then he pulls up and says, hey, we're gonna keep going on this case. Mm-hmm. Get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And Demi Moore doesn't want to get in the car. Well, why is that? Is it because she's mad at him? Or is it because there's a fucking drunk man behind the wheel of a car, idiot?
Yeah, I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, he had just downed a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Right, yeah.
No, I'm not getting in that car, not because I'm angry, but because you're blitzed.
But those are those moments of hyper-reality that where, like, you know, first of all, I guess it's 92. Maybe drunk driving wasn't as big of a...
maybe it was safer to drunk drive.
Or no, I'm just saying maybe it just wasn't as big a taboo because, like, you know, okay, it's like yeah. you go back and watch Mad Men and, like, businessmen would tie one on and get in the car in the reg and people would drink when they're pregnant and smoke when they're pregnant and casual racism and litter. You know, just like, it's, yeah. I don't know if it's, like, a changing more. It's kind of like watching early 80s commentary and or comedies and realizing, whoa, look at the rape culture on display
right.
that we'll later deny. I feel like that's a little bit of that, but also like the thing that I thought was interesting, they try to force this chemistry between Tom Cruise and Demi Moore.
Yeah.
And I've got two yeah. problems with it. Number one is the standard Sorkin problem of any professional man and woman at the top of their game when they meet will just instantly be mortal enemies until they figure out they should be banging. And then we didn't actually get to see the banging, but so it will definitely be heavily implied.
So I guess – so this was a play before it was a movie.
Don't forget to ask me about my second problem because it's a bombshell.
We will. Okay. We'll get back All right. it. But to address this, it's interesting because this was a play.
Yes.
Sorkin turned it into a movie, and then he said it, when he was doing this and they were casting Demi Moore, the executives came to him and said, why do we have Demi Moore? Why is she a she in mm-hmm. this movie if they're not going to get together? And he said, because women are useful for more than just banging Tom Cruise. And
Sorkin knows that?
yeah. So apparently, like, Sorkin in this movie, or maybe... maybe it was Reiner. I don't know. It was some combination of the production staff there said, no, this is not.
So that's why there's this weird will they won't we within the whole fucking film.
The date is very strange. It kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Okay. So that
was like. They maybe should have pulled that out.
That was their way of like following the studio notes, but yet still like making a point of 90s era feminism.
Right. Because apparently there was, I think, a scene that they shot or a scene that was in the play or something that they pulled. Where, like, at the very end, Demi Moore asks him out on a date, and he asks her out on a date, and she says, like, only if you wear matching socks, which is a callback to something else that happened earlier in the movie.
Right.
And they pulled that, so I think they made a concerted effort not to to make it that kind of relationship.
Well, the other thing is, here's my second problem. I think Demi Moore and Tom Cruise look like brother and sister.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, their eyes are exactly the same shade and color. They have similar facial construction. And, like, it's very Luke and Leia.
Huh.
And I felt like that chemistry was not hot. It was incestuous. And
ooh, that's creepy.
Yeah, that with the whole movie, like, oh, maybe like, it looks like we're supposed to, but no, we're not. Like, mm-hmm. it kind of heightened that sensation. But, like,
gotcha.
I found that very... I wish they had just played Demi Moore as being... a hard-nosed but very legalistic attorney with no trial experience.
Yeah.
So she's idealistic and she doesn't really know how things work. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise was the one that's like much more talented but also more of a shit weasel that like, hey, mm-hmm. I'm just going to churn through all these appeals and, you know, he's going to Better Call Saul it up and just leave all the sexual chemistry out because yeah. it was every single time that started happening, the movie just started getting clunk, like, you
absolutely.
Know, someone poured a sugar in its fuel tank and it just wasn't having it.
And maybe it's because, you know, it doesn't go anywhere, right? Nothing yeah. comes of it. It's just there kind of for the sake of being there. It's very right. strange. I mean, it does give them an opportunity to discuss some important, you know, character beats for Caffey. Uh-huh. Like, I think the progression of him from complete fuck up, who never should have been admitted to JAG in the first place, to guy who stands up and says, I need to show myself as honorable here and do the right thing, I think is a pretty good arc.
It reminded me a lot of that Paul Newman, The Verdict.
Uh-huh.
Like that same kind of like there's this okay. hotshot lawyer who maybe he was great. This is like
yeah.
But he's like just not fucking taking anything seriously, and he gets handed a case where it's like, oh shit, mm-hmm. I am a terrible human being if I don't handle this seriously. But I don't know that I even can because it's been so like it's a
no,
lot.
That's a great movie
it's,
too.
It is. But it's like it's a lot of his. He's just a younger version of that Paul Newman character. Yeah. Great fucking character though.
And the motivations are good. I mean, you know, there's always, with younger characters, there's always that element of, like, can they get out of daddy's shadow,
right.
essentially, right?
Right, yeah.
And I think, like, the force is pushing him in that direction, both a little bit of shame, like, you know, when Demi Moore calls him an ambulance chaser with a rank.
Right.
That's in there. The shame coming from seeing these very honorable men, right, tell him that they have no respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as well-placed or misplaced as that might be, I think that shames him kind of into keeping this case going.
Got it.
And then there's, you know, he kind of also does it out of spite in a weird way. Like, he deduces somewhere along the way that they put him on this case because they wanted it to settle out of court.
Right. They that's what they want, is this thing to go away.
Right.
And for these scapegoats to take it. Because the thing is he wasn't supposed to die, right? Like, I
don't think so.
Because
no.
That's the one thing, I haven't seen this movie enough, and it's been a long time. I haven't really thought about it. But, like, I think that there was no poison. They just were supposed to just beat the shit out of this kid.
Yeah.
And to everyone's surprise, because he's got this medical condition, he probably shouldn't have been running in the heat of Cuba. And, you know, I want to definitely talk about that. Like, this whole, you know, this poor private
Santiago,
and, like, it's very similar to, or I think it's similar to the Bo Bergdahl situation. Like, in peacetime with an all-volunteer military, I understand that, like, when you give soldiers orders, they should follow them, but, like, early on, you got to see, like, some of these guys just shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And it's better for everyone's involved for them to not be around. Like, I get, maybe if we're fighting an existential war, you have to do shit like this because you just can't have people deserting because whatever, because they're not cut out for it. Or I don't know, if we got a full draft and it's like, you know, nation, you know, World War II type of situation. But it's hard to argue that you should, you know, beat the shit out of people because they're bad soldiers.
Yeah.
Or because they, you know, for whatever reason, mental, emotional, physical, they're just not cut out for soldiering.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you should kick them out.
Yeah.
Should transfer him to a lighter duty.
Right.
Some other, like, maybe he'd make a great lawyer.
Yeah.
In fucking JAG, right?
Like, right, right.
Let's get him on that path.
Yeah.
Let's not force him in down the path that we want him on. Let's put him on the one he's suited for.
Right, right. Although it's like, you know, if you got a kid that can't even meet basic physical training standards, I just there's got to be a better way than fucking, you know, doing a blanket party on him or code red or whatever.
I would think so.
But
that's not the kind of guy Jessup is.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the other thing is, I had a little bit problem with, like, the character of Colonel Jessup. Like, this guy who's just about to rise to, you know, this guy seems, like, very politically ambitious. But on the eve of this triumph, he's going to just flout a general order because for this, like, fuck-up soldier. Because why not? And, you know, it's like, that felt like a very fool.
I get you.
Kind of like he's the Colonel version of the Tom Cruise character. He's just he's a little bit too full of himself and sure of his position in the universe, and he's acting foolish.
This is like the cop who's a week away from retirement and decides to take a case, right?
Right, exactly.
I'm going to take this one last
it's
case.
Like, yeah, you know, boys, I'm here in this, like, you know, high-pressure situation here down in Cuba, and I'm about to get out of it and, you know, have my coronation.
Yeah.
Let's code red this fucking flame out.
This nobody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go out with a bang. It's like kind of odd. It was an odd character. And that's the thing. It's like, I wish if I was going to remake this, I'd give him some other motivation. Just ooh-rah, got to be hard ass in front of the red Cubans, you know, like,
yeah,
like it's just like it's greed. Like, he's actually doing some kind of deal to make money, you know.
He's
tilting as like some sort of government contract abuse, or maybe there's even foreign money if you want to make it really political. There's like some kind of Russian influence type of thing, and it's just corruption 101. It's not like good versus evil, some Spartacus 300 philosophy versus, you know, Tom Cruise's dress white slur word for homosexuals kind of routine, you know.
Right.
Just make it like it's just corruption, and it happens even in places as focused with honor and truth and righteousness as the fucking Marine Corps.
Well, I do think that the movie frames Jessup as the bad guy. I mean, he's doing an honorable job, but he's maybe not performing it quite as honorably as we would like. So, like, because they present him as having a God complex, right? Like, people obey my orders because they're my orders.
Right.
I deserve respect because I am who I am and I do the job I do and it's more dangerous than your job. He definitely comes across as a guy who demands respect above everything else.
And
I think that serves the movie really well. I mean, and you need a fucking actor like Jack Nicholson. I cannot say enough.
He's
good
fully
stuff
believable
about Jack
as
Nicholson.
This character. Like I 100%. I question the character, but his portrayal of it is exactly what a guy like that would be like.
Yeah.
It's just I guess it's like that's the other Sorkin thing is like this is a weirdly pro-military, anti-military film.
Yeah, it's a tale of
because he's
two
saying
movies,
because
yeah.
like, there's some crucial things where Sorkin's like getting his digs in where. Colonel Jessup has him give this, is it Mikkelsen? The guy to commit suicide later.
Markinson. Yeah.
He gives him like this kind of like, well, you know, boss, we shouldn't do the code red. We can't really do this. It's not right. It's against the law. And he gives the like, well, look at you, pissant. I've risen faster to the ranks. And it's kind of like the film's referendum on like guys like Jessup succeed in the military, whereas people they're like by the book and. I don't know that that's consistent with my understanding of military reality. It seems like there's plenty of room to be a by the book. I'm going to do exactly what I'm told to do. Like the people that are more middle of the road, not like gung ho effective super. It's people in the middle that make political decisions that rise the fastest. And I thought, you know, there again, that's just what the agenda that Sorkin's trying to push there.
I mean, certainly for that character. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, this movie is self-contained, right? It's all of the movie takes place within the military structure.
Yes.
And so everything good that we see from characters and everything bad can be attributed to that.
Yeah.
Or is encompassed by that world. So,
so
he's not necessarily saying that everyone in the military thinks like this and is evil.
Right.
Because there's Tom Cruise and Demi Moore and Kevin Pollak on the other side saying, These are the honorable traits we need to uphold as military officers.
Yeah.
So you have both sides pushing and pulling against each other, which I think makes for a compelling story here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because it was all just like Jessup's. You'd just do the code red and nobody would bat an eye. And he'd rise to whatever attorney general or whatever. He's going to be not attorney general.
Right. Yeah.
Some kind of general level and that'd be it.
Yeah.
A colonel? Is he going for colonel? I don't know what the fuck. I can't remember the position.
General
he's going
is,
for.
I think, the top rank of the U.S. Marine Corps.
He is a colonel?
He's a colonel.
Okay, and he's going for the generalship.
Or something along, because I think there's a couple steps in between. The Marine ranks are a little weird, I think, of all of it, because it's a weird blend of like Army and Navy, as you would expect for essentially a. That's the role. That's the role. They're a mutant bastard hybrid of the Army and the Navy.
While we're talking about Jessup, I think. So there are a lot. Well, I want to say a lot of good scenes. There are actually only, I think, three scenes with Jack Nicholson in them. The first one is his meeting with Markinson and Kendrick.
Where they hatching the cover up.
Yeah, they say, no, we're not going to go easy on this guy. The second one is the meeting in Cuba with Tom Cruise and Demi Moore, where, you know, they insult each other.
Right.
And Demi Moore gets a little too questiony. For Tom Cruise's taste. And then the third one is the final scene.
Right. What was the point of Tom Cruise getting... because Demi Moore's pushing this point that's a futile point. You know, it's like that's her job in the movie is to be as exasperating. Like, well, I object. You're overruled. Well, I super object, you know. And every lawyer, everyone in the audience is like, Jesus Christ, lady. Okay, you know, it's like, and I like how Pollock kind of lays it out at the end because it's not Tom. I don't think it's Tom Cruise. I think it's Kevin Pollock where he's just like, oh, really? We're going to super object. Oh, it's like, has there any time in the history of the world a judge been like, oh, well, on second consideration, you're right. My first instinct was to, like, it's a good scene, but like, why? I'm of two minds of it. And one mind says Tom Cruise actually wanted her and he made a big deal about her asking a question just to get her dander up so it would get kind of like, Jessup emotionally off balance, just like it was a smaller scale version of the trick he played at the end. So then when he dropped the can I get the paperwork question on you, he was going to get more of a genuine reaction out of the man. Or was he really upset that Demi Moore is getting Nicholson worked up so that he wouldn't be able to accurately gauge the emotional reaction his question had?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I can tell you what goes on in, like, the final scene.
Yeah.
Some of those finer points there are maybe lost on me.
I think that, I mean, I think it's more effective storytelling if it's the former, where he's just, like, he sees that she's asking a question, he could just let her ask it. But he riles her up to get Jessup riled up so that he would be off balance, just the same way that he brought in these guys that don't know shit and has Pollock walk in a last-minute piece of paper that seems like, yeah, fuck yeah, I got you now, Bolt, just so he would be sweating a bit so he could get emotionally carried away in his testimony.
Yeah. Could be. I mean, he does, you know, bluff. He definitely bluffs with those Andrews Air Force Base ground crew.
Mm-hmm.
Witnesses were going to testify that they knew absolutely nothing about right. this flight. That yeah, was pretty
yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I
and
think
the
like,
balls on Tom Cruise to be like, you know, essentially like at the height of that the pressure he's applying to Jessup to be like, use those two guys that literally know nothing.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant strategy because you know that Jessup, like if you're convinced that Jessup did this thing, then he's got to be sweating because he did a whole bunch of extracurricular activities to get suppressed this information. So he knows yeah. damn well there's probably a couple dozen people out in the wind that could blow his shit up.
Uh huh.
And he doesn't know who
if they
are.
Remember. Yeah.
Right. Because you don't ask details. Now give me the name of everyone you're going to order to uh-huh. cover up this bullshit for me.
No, you just say take it out of the logs. That's the thing. Yeah. So to talk about Demi Moore's character a little bit, I feel like it's weird that how they use her most of the time, because it is in those moments of like almost a foil to the case, right? Like right. there's this moment you talked about the moment in the courtroom, but you go back to that Cuba meeting with Jessup and she's pushing all these questions that are not really getting anywhere. Right.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is saying, let's please get out of here.
Yeah.
This is not helping. And I get it. She's maybe somewhat inexperienced. She's an investigator first and foremost, right? With internal affairs, she's doing what she does.
And
it sets Jessup off,
yeah,
right? Like
yeah.
it. And in one way, like it doesn't do the defense any favors. But in another way, it tells them exactly what kind of person Jessup is, and they use that later in order to rile him up and get him to admit what they want him to admit.
Because there is an underlying brittleness to his strength.
Absolutely,
like these
yeah.
Like he can't abide these personal slights, and he wants to, you know, if you're going to humiliate or embarrass him in his eyes, and he's going to make you grovel. Like there's that. Mm-hmm. It's all there for sure. It's all there for sure.
And I think he in that Cuba scene is both annoyed with having to answer the questions of an underling in Tom Cruise, and perhaps also annoyed at having to answer the questions of a woman who is an officer.
Yeah, and that's I was about to talk about next is like there is I couldn't the other thing keeping me from getting a peg on Demi Moore's character is this movie made in 92. I kept on thinking the objections to her as a lawyer are just essentially because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But in a weird reverse kung fu, I think the movie does a good job of making it clear that people's objections to her are real and material objections to her as practicing
yeah.
the law. Like
absolutely.
When you know, the old boys like kick her out of the rooms, so they can talk behind her back, you'd be like, well, I don't know if this woman, G.I. Jane, can handle it, blah, blah, blah.
right.
But they don't. They're like,
yeah.
this woman is like a rules heavy, shitty trial experience. She's a stick, like she's kind of a pain in the ass. It's nothing about her being a woman. It's just the fact of like
it's this personality is, based.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And like throughout the movie, it's like that. I kept expecting it just to be that. But also, yes, I cannot help but watch Colonel Jessup and think that he does not take kindly. I mean, he's certainly the biggest sexist pig in the movie.
I think so. Yeah.
Although, like, you know, they made Tom Cruise a lot of his like shit that he's I don't know. It's so. It seems like there's a lot of Tom Cruise being sexist towards Demi Moore, but I think that's more Sorkin just like, oh, look at these oil and water types not mixing. And
yeah, yeah.
You know, but there again, then why
and
the
his
weird
laissez-faire attitude about everything.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not sure. I do think like they do a really good job showing that God complex on like I do dangerous work that no one else does on Jessup. And it comes into play at the end of the movie in spectacular fashion. And you need an actor like Jack Nicholson in this role
yeah.
because he has to be intimidating. He has to inherently command respect, both, you know, with his face and his actions.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine anybody else in this role.
Right.
it's just, it's an amazing, iconic performance. And it's so small, too. I read that Jack Nicholson got paid $5 million
for probably
out of a $33 million budget for 3 days, literally three days worth of work.
I was thinking, like, yep, each of those scenes was one day, and he's done. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But in my opinion, he makes this movie.
No, you pay Jack Nicholson $5 million so that you can fully develop his character in three scenes.
Yes.
Because he's just, it's like hiring Arlie Ermey as your, like, you don't, you just see him screaming in someone's face for 5 seconds. Like, yes, that's exactly who that person is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a skill. And like, you know, Jack Nicholson, when he gives a fuck, just like Brando before him, is mm-hmm. is a force of nature to be reckoned with.
Sure.
If he gives a fuck.
Yeah.
And you can get him to do it. I want to talk about the obvious Sorkinisms we see in this movie. We've talked about a few of them, but like, they start off the top with, like, the one of the most famous, the walking and talking.
Yeah.
Like, Demi Moore just, like, you know, walking briskly and having this professional conversation. I don't think I've ever seen a walking and talking soliloquy, but here we get one. The other one is when, like, Tom Cruise is like, you don't know me, and Demi Moore's like, I know you. It's like if you said to me, you don't know me, and I'm like, but I do. You're Jim Jones. You know, have a 2-year degree, an associate's degree at Ivy Tech, and you're currently based in Cincinnati, but you've had domiciles in Indianapolis, Chicago, and San Diego. You've been podcasting for 8 years, and there's 3 hairs on your left nut. Like she just like, I don't believe anyone in the history of the universe has ever done this. Ever just come up and blown someone up by the way they can recite their fucking resume to them.
Yeah. This is definitely a movie thing that Sorkin does.
I mean, it's so, like, that's the thing. Like, if you see this, like, because that reads as, like, Demi Moore is just, like, a fucking cyborg. Like, she's, like, mm-hmm. a Mintat from the Dune universe. But every time you see it since, it's like, oh, this is such horseshit. This is just a way to make exposition a little bit more interesting. But just.
The only analogy I can come up with is, it's like someone walks up to you with a squirt gun and squirts you in the chest.
Right.
And you say, ha, you'll never get me wet. It's impossible.
Right.
And then they pull out a fucking fire hose and just launch you into the stratosphere with a cannon of water.
Right, right.
That's what he's doing here, right? Like, I don't know.
What's weird is, like,
it seems
when,
silly in a lot
if
of
Tom
ways.
Cruise asserts you don't know me and she just raises off his resume, the perfect rebuttal to that would be, that's not me, dumbass. I don't put my deepest fears, thoughts, and inner motivations on my resume. Be gone.
Yeah.
Like, the reaction isn't like this dumbstruck, oh my God, you are inside my skull just because you can rattle off easily publicly verified details of my life.
He should rattle off her resume and then say, do I know you?
Yeah, right, right, yeah. Yeah, you've been a mild disappointment to your family that wished that you had. Yeah, it's like, I mean, a bit. I mean, but it's classic Sorkin. Like,
it is,
every single thing. Like, this happens 5 times a season in The West Wing. It happens 5 or 6 times I know of in the newsroom. Any others that I'm missing?
Probably. Probably. I can't pinpoint him, though.
A lot of schmaltzy, vaguely patriotic musical cues when people start getting speechifying in this one, too.
Yep.
You know, that's actually... Yeah, anyway, I can't
wait. And a lot of dense, you know, rapid-fire dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when Tom Cruise gets going. That's the other thing. Tom Cruise's character in this is doubly weird because I feel like there's a point in the movie where he goes from complete and utter fuck up to lawyer superhero.
Right.
A trial lawyer superhero. A guy who freely admits that he's never really seen the inside of a courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's a little tongue in cheek. He has to going through law school.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's never done like an actual real trial as an independent lawyer.
Yeah, this is like Matt Damon's Rainmaker character. You know, he's drinking the glass and a shake because he's so nervous. But
at some point, he becomes deeply, almost intuitively familiar with the psychology and the strategy, the tactics of trial law.
Right.
Of practicing it. And I don't know where that switch comes from. It's clear that, like, he changes his mind and says, okay, I'm going to engage on this case because it's warranted. It's worthy of my attention. But I never saw anything from him that told me that he was well-versed in the tactics of trial litigation.
Well, it's almost like it's this that he was like, it's all genetics and talent. Like his father was like this. And maybe there is some of that because if you grew up, because his father died 5 years before then. So like I can imagine like if you had a like insanely well-regarded and respected trial lawyer and there's something about his mental acuity and like the way he would deal with his family, like maybe the way he'd interrogate, like if Tom Cruise clogged the toilet. And he'd sit down with his brothers and sisters and be like, all right, I'm going to cross-examine each one of you little fuckers.
What an asshole. He clogs a toilet and then cross-examines his brothers and sisters?
No, I say this. His dad. Okay. His dad is the one. And like you see, like, oh, this is like, I've been raised with this lawyer blood flow. It is a little Game of Thronesy, right? Like, I've got my father's raging lawyer blood coursing through my veins.
A little
and
bit,
I just have to tap into that. But that's a little bit Sorkin-y, too. Like, there is these... like ubermensch levels of talent and that overcomes like it, you know, Tom Cruise's LeBron James of basketball. He like came out, you know, what, like he's 18 years old and taking the league by storm. There's a little bit. And sometimes that does happen, but
sure. Yeah.
I don't think the legal field is probably one of them where, you know, that courtroom experience seems like it's so vital.
It has to be. Yeah. I mean, even if you just have a father who, you know, goes around daily talking about the ins and outs of trial law.
Putting you through mock court and moot court. And
I would think you would still need some experience in actual court to do that stuff.
I would think so, too.
But there's a lot of stuff. You know, I talked about how silly in some ways Tom Cruise's character is. But also, there's a lot of stuff that's really good here. I do think the development of that character makes a lot of sense, you know, with all the pressures on him. And I think that once they get him into the court, and he's got this decision to make about will he or won't he pursue Jessup. It becomes, he gets entangled in this case much more than he wanted to in the beginning, but in a way that he won't allow himself to back out of, both because, you know, he's being shamed into it, but also he starts to feel that honor, that sense of responsibility. And then there's a moment where he pushes all of his chips in, right? He says, okay, if I can't get Jessup to admit that he called this code red, my career is over.
Yo,
I'm betting everything
on
this.
Yes.
And I'm doing it.
Not just career, maybe it's freedom, because they're talking like it's a pretty important crime, and if a very well political guy would have the juice to fuck you. Like you're
absolutely
not like every single time you go to court he calls the judge personally and be like, now you're not gonna let this fucking ass wiper, navel jag, you know, piss all over the core, are you? You know?
No, so there's just a ton at stake there, and I feel like he's not just doing it out of some sense of, like, I want to make my father proud or, like, I have a legal responsibility. He's doing it because he sees these clients that he's defending and he knows he owes it to them. And he owes it to the other two lawyers that he's been working with for this time. He owes it to the military branch that he serves in. He truly understands what honor means in that situation and he's willing to bet everything on it. And I think that's... you know, it's a little schmaltzy. It's a little over the top, but it's also very effective.
Another Sorkin thing, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
But yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed that part of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I also I think there's a couple other like Sorkin kind of elements which are fairly interesting insights into things. Like there's this one thing where you know, Cruise and Pollock are trying to explain an actual courtroom to Demi Moore's character, and they're like, you know, when we're talking about the jury, it's not just about the law, it's assigning blame. Like, it's like they got this horrific thing that's happened. Someone's got to be you know, someone's got to take responsibility for this. I got two people in front of me that the government thinks, like, there's an insane amount of pressure, the presumption of innocence, which he also illustrates where, like, Tom Cruise, there's this medical doctor that gives his opinion that this guy was poisoned. And Tom Cruise just gets up and says, this guy's got some fake-ass law degree, and I got Polaroid. I've seen Polaroid pictures of him molesting children, and he doesn't know shit about poison, and he's done fucked up the case. And he just rants and raves, and, like, you know, Kevin Bacon's like, objection, objection, and the judge is like, sustained, sustained. And then there's, like, some half-ass, like, oh, yeah, jury, just disregard everything he said.
Right.
People don't work that way. Like, there's like this jury's like, I want to know what's on them Polaroids, man. This doctor sounds like a fucking nutcase. Like,
right.
It's so funny to me that, like, this lawyer can introduce all this crazy shit, and then they just say, well, like, the jury, like, some kind of Man in Black mind-wiping device. Like, you know, none of that actually happened. Pa-ching!
Yeah,
so, like,
it
there's
can't
so
be perfect.
The state, I mean, that's the thing that I've come to realize, is the state just has an immense amount of power against the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's a miracle anyone gets acquitted, honestly. And these guys, I guess, didn't get fully acquitted.
Yeah, and like you said, Tom Cruise knows that it's not necessarily about proving that they didn't do it exclusively.
Right.
It's also about giving the jury somewhere else to put the blame.
Right, right. Because somebody had to be at fault here.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Some of the other, like, legal maneuverings, like, I don't know. Like, I'm always, as a non-lawyer, I'm like, this has got to be, like, the most exceptional type of shit. Like, because otherwise, why'd they make a movie of it? But, like, it just seems like there's so many, like, juicy things. Like, you get the, you know, Noah Wiley.
Yes,
and,
I love,
you know, like,
scene.
Show me the code red, where this is, and all, like, Kevin Bacon just, like, being a smarmy ass. And then they're like, where's the mess hall? Did you not eat the whole time? And, like, well, I guess I just went with the crowd.
No, it's great. I love that scene.
And then I thought, like, was it effective, the core thrust of Tom Cruise's argument against Jessup at the end, where he's like, you know, which is it, Colonel? Do your men all follow your orders unquestionably, or do people take it upon their own to dislike? That feels like a Star Trek android argument, where, like, a reasonable person can
but
be
it's
like...
Not. It's about what...
It's about Colonel, reasonable doubt, right?
It's about what Colonel Jessup himself believes. Whether his men follow his orders to the T always or not,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter, because it's about what Colonel Jessup believes. Because in this moment, he's saying, I believe that my orders will always be followed.
Right.
And I've given an order that he not be touched.
Right.
And yet, I'm doing something that directly contradicts that spoken belief, right? I'm transferring him off the base.
But if
he wasn't to be touched, he was in no danger, why the transfer?
But, like, I felt like Colonel Jessup was well on his way to being like, look, I do believe that firmly, but I'm also mm-hmm. not a betting man when it comes to another man's life, so I took that as a precaution.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like that's...
But that's not the kind of guy Jessup is, and I think Caffey knows that.
So he's like... Because the other thing is, like, I felt like Jessup... was all too willing to just make up lies. Like, if that's the type of guy that he is, like, I felt like he was way too willing to just tell a mamby-pamby version of the truth. I don't know. There's something...
I think that's true until you get to the core of what Jessup believes and how he views himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't view himself as a guy whose orders will not be followed.
Right. And he also makes some strategic errors. I guess my question is, how many strategic errors can a man make in 5 minutes worth of courtroom before it becomes a little unrealistic? Like, it's, you know, he gets up without being dismissed.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, he implements a horseshit, ticky-tacky, professional courtesy, and then disrespects the judge in the exact same way, thinking that that's going to get, like, and then he lets Tom Cruise bait him in this emotional argument where he could have just been like, you know, I can't spend, you know, like, look, I know it sounds like a contradiction, but, like, I didn't get to be a fucking colonel by not making backup plans. Like, I'm pretty sure that my Marines are going to prevail when I take them to assault this hill. But you know what? I also have a retreat plan, and I also have a plan for this and a plan for that. Like, I'm not, you know, like, making the point that, like, I'm not, I don't know. But then I guess is... Like, well, there's no way. But that isn't that. Isn't that the argument Jessup should have made? Because then there's doubt. Like, I gave the fucking order and I expected to be obeyed. At some point down in chain of command, it got fucked up. Maybe it's at these two guys' level. Mm-hmm. Because that, I guess, that protects him. Why does he need to send the? Why does he? Why is it important to him that these two guys take all of the blame? Because if he just raises a doubt, then the government's going to have no case, because they're going to have to try. You know, every piece of middle management in between Jessup and the sergeant, or the lance corporal, rather. Like,
yeah, no, I think you sitting on the stand make that argument.
Yeah.
I think Colonel Jessup,
he just can't.
Is too full of himself to make that argument, to even see that argument.
Right. Do you think it was realistic for him once he committed? Like, he seemed to understand the danger of admitting that he did order to code red. So, right. like, I... This is where.
So then he does it, and he's surprised.
He does
when,
it, and then he's surprised. Like, I think he should have been shocked when he said it, but like not surprised at the consequences. But
gotcha. That would
like
made more
to
sense.
Me, yeah. Like I felt like there's a lot of gilding the lily. Like the climax of the movie was Jessup saying, "You're goddamn right, I did, and I do it again." Mm-hmm. That is the climax of the movie. But then they keep stretching out with him, like, "Well, why are you arresting me for this crime that I knew was bad and would be prosecuted as such if I admitted it, and I just admitted it." And then he goes mad dog on Tom Cruise, like, and that was felt weird. And then they read these guys are charges, and then the one Marine who's the idiot doesn't get it, and then like he has to have explained it, and then he's like officer. I felt like there's a whole lot of lily gilding when I already was suitably impressed with what happened.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, I get what you're saying.
Like,
sure.
In a real courtroom, I felt like they could have done a better job of not having Tom Cruise screaming like a lunatic for 30... I mean, mm-hmm. It's very exciting, but...
No, I think you're exactly right. If they have... So...
Sorkin cranked up to 11 out of 10. It should have been like a 10 out of 10.
Let me preface this by saying, I love the way the movie ends.
Agreed. I don't want to piss off Sean Ray because...
You can ride that fucking beat of Jack Nicholson saying, "You can't handle the truth, and you're goddamn right I did." You can ride that all the way through the credits. It's amazing.
That's an amazing moment, yes. Yeah.
And I don't want to say that this diminishes it too much, but I do think it might have been more effective, saying, to have Colonel Jessup try and walk it back. So, yeah. Like, realize, oh, shit.
Right.
I've done something really bad. I've just fucked myself here. And try and walk that back while the bailiffs are taking him out of the court.
Or just grit his teeth. And he's shooting hate daggers at Tom Cruise. But he's not going to protest because he's not... Like, they made Colonel Jessup to be a very intelligent man. Like, very well-read.
Yes.
You know, Machiavellian. Like, understand. Like, the fact that he didn't... The fact he didn't understand, like, there's a moment in The Expanse season 2 where the Secretary General of the UN is having a conversation with this, like, you know, industrialist. And industrialist suddenly realizes that this guy's not smart enough to realize that his employers know they're working together. And he's like, okay. "Jesus Christ, you don't even realize the real danger we're in. I can't even believe Jessup should have been have that awareness of, like, I... understand the tactical blunder just happened, and I'm furious that this fucking pissant got the better of me, but I have been had." Like, it kind of weakens my opinion of Colonel Jessup as an adversary to see him do the shit he did.
I kind of think that's the point.
Yeah.
At the end, for him to be reduced to this guy who has no recourse, and all he can do is lash out and try and, you know, fight his way.
Yeah.
Out of the courtroom, like,
yeah,
I do think there's something about just thoroughly tearing that man down in the end that they do effectively there. But I don't think maybe they hit the perfect note, but it was still a good note. And then I think where the movie kind of picks back up and I really get, you know, a sense of pride in humanity is when these two defendants are like, "Well, fuck, you know, we're not brought up on like criminal charges for murder or manslaughter, but we lose the code of honor, we lose everything that we've been fighting for,"
which was the deal they rejected from Tom Cruise a good hour and 30 minutes earlier in the film.
6 months and you're out, no problem.
But then what?
Yeah, so they've lost that anyway. Like, none of this has helped them in any possible way.
Except.
And then Tom Cruise drops that you don't need a patch on your arm to be honorable.
Right.
And I think that, in my mind, like, is the perfect capper for this movie. And then we go out to credits. So.
And like, I felt like the verdict was that's what I would consider justice. Because Colonel Jessup is the true villain, but it's like my understanding that everyone's responsibility in the Marine Corps would be to not obey unlawful orders. And if you're specifically forbidden in the code of conduct to do these code reds, and that's what they made it clear, that the brass has said this is bullshit, it has stopped, because they've all made the analysis. Yeah. This isn't war anymore, we're in relative peace, it's an all-volunteer army, there's like this beating the shit out of somebody because they increased their underwear is dumb, you know, and it does bad things. Like, it does bad things to the morale, and, you know, it can't, because I can think that some people are like, well, this is just like politically correct or insensitivity run amok. But I don't know, man. Like, these admirals, like, whenever admirals and generals come out and be like, well, you know, we really really should look should do a better job taking women seriously when they say they're being assaulted and raped. Like, I don't know, maybe they're like lifelong soldiers that have a penetrating insight into what degrades a fighting force and what doesn't. And I don't know.
Yeah, I think oftentimes, like, you know, this is a blanket statement. I don't have any background with the military.
Right.
I hardly even know anybody who's been in the military. I know them loosely. But it seems to me like the military often has very, very good logistical solutions to things,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not great, you know, soft skills in
sure.
a lot of ways. Because, like, you look at that scene with Noah Wiley, and he's talking about how his hand was sweaty and his palm slipped and he fucking dropped his gun or whatever.
Right.
Well, they have a solution. They have a logistical solution for that. Here's right. a powder you can yes. put on your hands, right? And he used the powder. It never happened again. No problems. But,
right.
like, yeah, what do you do when, you know, somebody just doesn't, like, physically can't live up to the
right.
goals that you've set for your squad? Like, they don't often have solutions for dealing with that.
Yeah,
the solution
like
is just club it to death.
That's what I thought was interesting about the Bo Bergdahl situation, which I understand is different because this wasn't at peacetime, and his
yeah.
deserting from his unit unarguably risked people's lives to go out
yeah.
there and try to find him, but it's arguable that it actually cost lives, although it seems like the commanding officers don't say so. But, like, the point about Bo Bergdahl is he'd already washed out of the Coast Guard because of, like, emotional problems, but because, you know, we had a surge on and we're trying to flow troops over there, like the recruiter had all the information when he went to try to, you know, go for the Army instead of Coast Guard, instead of being like, look, man, you're going to 4F it because of psychological reasons. They're just like rubber stamp, and he gets over there and he can't handle it, goes crazy,
yeah.
walks off base. It's like,
how much of that is his fault?
Yeah, like, I get it. Bo Bergdahl, like, and some people are, when we were briefly discussing season 2, they're really angry about, like, you know, he's a deserter and he's this and that. But it's like, did not the institution of the Army bear any collective guilt in putting that man into that position?
Sure.
Because they're supposed to, you know, select and train men suitable for the roles that they're putting them into, and they clearly did not do their job. And I feel like they didn't do the job with Santiago. Like,
that doctor, maybe more specifically.
Right, but, like, just, you know, it's when you got a guy who can't do it, it's different from a guy who, like, you know, you're trying to build him up into the few, the proud, the Marines,
yeah,
right?
It's like Pyle, right?
Like
from Full Metal Jacket.
There's a difference between, like, tempering a person and unlocking their full potential and essentially bullying a disabled person.
Yeah.
And I really felt when that guy was, like, he's, like, a quarter mile behind and they reenact and he shoved him to the ground and he fucking blacked out because he's in the middle of heat strokes, like, Jesus, this guy just can't
yeah.
do it, man. Like, he's Pyle in Full Metal Jacket, another good example.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this guy didn't lose his mind and shoot up his platoon, but it's the same. It's just a different side of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to force people to have no business being there, it's not good for anybody.
And I think that's, like, one of, you know, the questions. Look, the military is dealing with a lot of tricky issues
mm-hmm.
when it comes to this stuff, and, like, borderline questions, like, how far do you want your soldiers to follow your orders?
Right. In an industry where you're killing people,
yeah.
like, you're doing
dirty
you're,
business.
You're doing the most morally irreprehensible things because the state has said it's okay to do so to pursue the interest of our country. Like,
sure.
It is the trickiest of businesses.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't envy any of the men who are making these decisions and trying, but, you know.
And especially when it comes to the obeying orders thing, I feel like that is one of the hardest questions to answer for myself, because I do understand the value of just following orders.
Right.
Especially, you know, as Colonel Jessup would say, when you're behind that fence and you got a whole bunch of enemies ready to snipe
sure.
you if you're wearing the wrong colored uniform,
sure.
right? Like, that shit is dangerous, and orders must be followed or people die.
Right.
How far do you want to take that, right? Because
right.
then you end up with Nazi Germany.
Like, yeah, I was gonna say,
there is an absolute
yeah.
line there somewhere, but
yep.
but where you put
where
it
is
a very tricky question.
Right, yeah. And I think that's those gray areas. But to me, this movie is interesting because it doesn't really explore a gray area. It explores an area that has specifically been called off by the superiors.
That's true.
That
yeah.
Colonel Jessup. I mean, that's the movie in a microcosm. Like,
well, his argument
this isn't
is,
a gray area. This is the brass has been paid. Like, this is now black. And Colonel Jessup says, I think it's still white. And so
because of his special circumstance, right? Like, I'm in Guantanamo Bay. I'm not in, you know, a fucking
right.
JAG Corps.
Because
right.
the
mainland.
Fucking Cuban army is at any minute going to roll tanks on Gitmo.
I mean,
like, they
yeah.
are facing an existential threat huddled on the windward side of Cuba.
Right.
Like, that's the other thing. Like,
he's not in literally the most dangerous situation.
Yeah, like, that's I don't know, like, maybe south of the DMZ of Korea, you could say
right,
that, or
right.
like, you know, height of Cold War, West Germany, you could say that, but fucking Cuba in the 90s, get out of here, man. Get out of here.
That's fair, but that is his argument, right? That right. I'm a special case.
Yeah.
That Guantanamo Bay doesn't
again,
need to follow those rules.
But that's the point,
rules.
Like, so people can just do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, he's ignoring the orders,
ignoring,
just like they.
Exactly.
They supposedly can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
He's a hypocrite.
Yes.
For sure.
I mean, there's, like, a lot of these subtle, like, points that I don't know how subtle they are, because it is an Aaron Sorkin thing, but, you know, it is kind of funny. And that he contrasts the, like, free thinkers, the people like the Lance Corporal who... Because that's the other thing. It's like, this Lance Corporal is a righteous dude. Like, he was looking after people, but his... I mean, it reminds me of kind of like Moses, right? You know, Moses is like this... like he's God's favorite homeboy, does everything right throughout his life. Right before you get to the promised land, he smacks a stick on a rock and says,
yeah.
God damn it, you see, you made me get water. You made me get water for you people. And God's like, hey, yo, you forgot to say it. I did it.
Yeah.
So guess what? You're gonna climb up this mountain. You're going to see the people crossing the promised land. You're going to die here because the promised land ain't for you, Moses.
Yeah.
Like, this guy had stood up and they offer him, like, well, you're not ever going to get a promotion unless you beat the shit out of some of these guys. And he's like, fine, I hope the Lance Corporal thing was worth it, because that's a pretty stiff penalty. Like, he's going to get drummed out, a dishonorable discharge. I don't know how big of a thing that is nowadays. Like, I've heard that it used to be, like, just under being a felon. Like, you know, people would take that shit seriously. Oh, you got a you got a dishonorable discharge. Well, you must be some kind of stripe of shit weasel.
Yeah, I mean, for people who pride themselves on their honor.
But no, I'm saying, like, for job prospects and getting apartments,
okay, yeah,
and,
yeah,
like, getting your, like, I'm assuming you don't get any of the GI Bill benefits if you're dishonorably discharged. Like, it probably got a lot of real-life impacts on this guy.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, all through the chain of command, like, is, who was the guy who was his lieutenant? It's not Kevin Bacon, because he was the lawyer.
Kiefer. Yeah.
Like, is he, I'm sure, like, because there was a warrant out for his arrest at the end of the movie. Like,
yeah.
The entire chain of command, the other guy just blew his brains out. Like, is everybody going to be held equally responsible?
I guess so, yeah.
I guess there'll be a trial for them anyway.
I mean, I imagine, so I imagine that the same fate will befall Kendrick as did Downey and Dawson. Right, he'll just be dishonorably discharged because he was just following orders as well, the
yeah.
same way they were.
Yeah, I suppose.
Colonel Jessup, now he's broken regulations.
Yeah, and
you
he
know?
Admitted
he's,
it already in sworn testimony.
Right, so he's going to be court-martialed and probably also dishonorably discharged. I don't know. I mean, he's not going to be executed.
No,
right?
No.
So everybody's just out.
What else do you want to talk about? Because Sean had another thing you wanted us to consider.
Let me ask you one more thing. There's not much Santiago in this movie. And I saw some criticism leveled against the film for not humanizing Santiago and not making us identify more with him. But I honestly thought that that was kind of the point.
Yeah.
I thought
same.
In order to get more at this examination of, you know, whatever surface level it's at, this examination of when do you follow orders, you know, how much can you justify by saying I'm protecting the country, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In order to do that, you didn't want to humanize Santiago.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted him to be more of an idea mm-hmm. than a human being.
Well, also, our relationship with Santiago is Tom Cruise's relationship. He's got the letters that we see
right.
dramatized, which
right.
is more than I thought we'd get. And we hear like statements made by the his fellow Marines, but like I felt like that helped you get into the headspace of like Demi Moore and Tom Cruise, because it's not like they got to go replay the movie of his life. And
right.
I thought I bet there's on the cutting room floor a scene with his aunt where she talks about him growing up and what a sweet boy he was, and you know, all that business, because she was an awful big character for this, just for the sight gag of thinking that she's like this old hag, and it turns out she's, I don't know, a perfectly serviceable person. Like she's just a woman. She's not super old. She's
older.
Not barefoot. And
so was I.
Like I don't know what it, but you know, it's like she had to have had a bigger role. Like that can't have been.
I assume so. Yeah.
But If there was, like, I thought they made the smart choice to, like, pair that away to, like, our relationship with them is just what Tom... It's, so he's almost an ideal. He's not a person. Because that's what we're talking about. Like, this is essentially, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Like, if this guy was a bad person, he didn't deserve what happened to him, and it wouldn't justify the military pop. And if he was, like, a saint, it wouldn't either.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I agree with you. I think humanizing him would be... I understand the impulse, but I think it would take away from the narrative.
Okay. I agree.
I also felt like he was pretty humanized. The 3 seconds I saw the guy getting shoved to the dirt, my heart went out to him.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
They could have done more there, certainly, but I'm kind of glad they didn't.
Did you have any other points?
Tom Cruise has a pretty good Jack Nicholson impression. Although I don't feel like it was based on this movie.
It was based
on his other works.
That is an interesting meta observation, because you're right. Tom Cruise isn't really doing Colonel Jessup.
No.
He's doing Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
So Kathy knows of Jack Nicholson outside of the universe of this movie, or what?
Yeah. No, that's pretty funny. Because you're right. Now, I wouldn't have made that connection, but I'm replaying it. And I'm like, yeah, totally. Totally.
All right, that's all I got.
Also, like... It's funny because, like, Kevin Pollak is a world-renowned impressionist. I bet he can do, like, ironclad Nicholson, and Tom Cruise is doing that in front of him. It'd be like Kevin Pollak running in front of Tom Cruise. Like, Tom Cruise is like, the fuck?
You call that running?
You got this guy running? Like, he should have just ran as fast as he could in that courtroom. Just to show up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want to show me up impressions? I'm going to... Here's my Tom Cruise run. So just to give you an idea of how fucking late we are on these commissions. We're over a year and a half late.
Christ.
This poor Sean, he sent us in this message when Tom Cruise's The Mummy came out.
Oh, man.
He says, in honor of The Mummy coming out this weekend, I'd like for you to briefly discuss Tom Cruise's career. He has had an amazing dramatic performance in Rain Man, Born on 4th of July, many others, but in recent years he's fully embraced the leading man action role, which I love. But again, wish he would get his dramatic acting muscles in tune again. Can you both please discuss what you like about his filmography and compare contrast his acting abilities as a dramatic actor and as an action leading man? Sure.
I'm trying to think of my favorite Tom Cruise performance. The one where I think he did the best job. It's pretty damn good here. I really like The Color of Money, but I don't know if I like Tom Cruise in The Color of Money or if I just love that movie. Top Gun is just so cheesy. It's hard to say that's one of his best.
Have you seen Far and Away? Is the one he was in with Nicole Kidman, and it's terrible. But A Few Good Men is really good. The Firm is really good. His vampire, Lestat, is really good in Interview with the Vampire.
You know what?
I mean, Eyes Wide Shut is super interesting.
I thought he was incredible in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah?
He's fucking
amazing
in Tropic Thunder. And Rock of Ages, too. Like,
yeah?
They're
very
weird,
funny in Rock of Ages.
Silly performances, but they're very good.
I like to think that Eyes Wide Shut is a sequel to Far and Away, and just what happened after Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise got married and bored. He's amazing in Magnolia.
Oh, shit. Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
As that guy who's like... essentially a fuck boy because his daddy doesn't love him.
Uh-huh.
And like, I'm, like I said, Tom Cruise has got a lot of facets to him.
Mm-hmm.
Collateral. whole, like, I don't like him much. And like the Minority Report's fine, Last Samurai's fine, but Collateral, I think he like is the first time he played like a badass that I'd find scary, because Ethan Hunt won't kill you. Vampire the Stat, he might kill you, but you'll have a boner or whatever. Collateral, that guy is just like he's just a fucker.
You know,
he plays a real like unsympathetic killer in that movie.
Percentage wise, Tom Cruise might be like percentage of their filmography wise.
Right.
Tom Cruise might be my most watched.
He's in a lot of stuff.
But I've seen like 95% of the movies he's been in. I don't know that I can say that about any other actor.
And he's like he's all over the place as far as genre.
Yeah.
And who he's worked with. Like, that's the other thing I guess I like about Tom Cruise, is he seems like he continually like wants to work with the best. Like, that's one of the things he does with the Mission Impossible franchise, is like, who's an interesting director working right now? This guy's worked for, you know, everybody from Rob Reiner to Oliver Stone, he's worked with some of the best, and
Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like he's a wacko guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what the real Tom Cruise is. I don't know what the person of Tom Cruise is. I don't know what he believes and thinks and feels, but holy shit, is he really good at doing those things on camera?
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm thinking like Edge of Tomorrow and his stuff though he's done in Mission Impossible, and then he went and added Jack Reacher to his belt. Like, he's just done an amazing job. And I don't know which, I guess, you know, how often does he have to go to the serious dramatic role? Is my question, because like he did that, like the
tried that in Last Samurai. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm looking, if I go back, the last like really into like that, like Valkyrie might be the last time he was in a serious drama. That's about the assassination of Hitler. Last Samurai.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
right.
I
saw Valkyrie.
That was that. I guess that would definitely be it. But it seems like he has been going more towards the ironic Tom Cruise and the Tom Cruise running type of roles.
Yeah, Action Cruise,
and he's good at it. He's good at it. So I think that's all I had to say about A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean Ray, for commissioning this movie and the many others, and I feel like 5 out of the next upcoming 8 outstanding commissions we have are Sean's. So thank you for your support of Bald Move, as always. And it was a lot of fun watching this for the first time in a long time. And if you have to pick a Godfather, not a bad Godfather to watch over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
We will see you next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.